Good evening. This is Mae Brussel. The title of this one-hour broadcast is World Watchers. It's program number 766, and it's August the 11th, 1986. For people who are not familiar with this fact, you may order the bibliographia sheets that accompany each broadcast. Send a self-addressed stamped envelope to Mae Brussel, P.O. Box 22511, Carmel 93922, and I'll give you the source of information from the articles that I use for this hour or any other one, World Watchers, that you have heard. I spoke in the last several weeks about Chief Justice Warren Burger of the Supreme Court resigning at this time to take over the celebration of the Constitution. It will be similar, I guess, to the Statue of Liberty celebration, only there will be changes in the Constitution this time, probably a lot that we don't know. One that they're working on is that 22nd Amendment to clear the way for Reagan to be president forever if he wants to. And I'm sure they'll throw in then the changing of the not allowing the foreign-born to be president. And I keep reiterating this because of the importance of making way for Henry Kissinger. Now, this past week, Representative Guy Vanderjack, of JAGT of Michigan, asked that the 22nd Amendment be repealed, making clear the way for Ronald Reagan to have a third term. And Vanderjack is chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee. He wants Americans to be allowed to decide how long their president should serve. He said the 22nd Amendment is an insult to American voters who are wise and informed. He has asked House Judiciary Committee Chairman Peter Rodino of New Jersey to promptly initiate action on that bill. And the Beverly Hills Courier, home base of Ronald and Nancy and most of their kitchen cabinet and friends, had an editorial by March Schwartz, the editor. This is August the 8th, 1986, on the White House scenario of changing the Constitution and having Ronald Reagan president again. And he goes over the weaknesses of the Republicans and the Democrats and thinks that there's a very positive thing in having Ronald Reagan president. Mr. Schwartz said, "We were in Geneva as part of the presidential entourage during the first Reagan-Gorbachev summit. We saw how much Gorbachev admired the U.S. president. Reagan's standing with other world leaders is stronger than ever, and meeting after meeting, he added to his stature." He doesn't talk about the world court, you know, that decided that Reagan was out of bounds with his foreign policy in Nicaragua. He refers to his winning personality, his stage presence, his innate honesty. That's why he stamps everything top secret. His indomitable spirit and his determination to stick to his guns. He has served the country well, and he goes into his wonderful domestic programs and added to the asset of Ronald Reagan is Nancy Reagan, who's helped her husband so much. The Courier believes Reagan would be a sure winner and that his continued occupancy of the White House would serve America and the rest of the world to great advantage. This will snowball and keep building up. Now, along with Reagan's image running mate, there was an article in the Washington Post July 26. Bush departs on Mideast image building trip. They're very open about it. There are not many secrets. And it shows George Bush sitting with the president with empty plates. They're supposed to be having lunch at the White House. Bush is looking to the left. Reagan is looking at him, a definitely staged picture. And then 2 days later, you probably all saw it, there's George Bush with a yarmulke kissing the Wailing Wall in Israel. So they announce, you know, 2 days before he's kissing the wall, that it's an image-building trip. And then over the wire services goes Bush with his two hands up, holding his cheek to the wall. I referred to that picture before, which is disgusting. But the Washington Post just throws it off as image building to get the Jewish vote. And, of course, March Schwartz in Beverly Hills is a Jew. And I'm sure putting Reagan in another term, he loves to see George Bush kiss the Wailing Wall. Alexander Haig had some comments in the newspaper this week that are typical Haig. Haig says that Star Wars should have been secret. President Reagan should have kept his Star Wars space missile system plans a secret rather than going public in 1983. That date that I keep referring to was March the 23rd, 1983, where he is going to shift the space and NASA and the heavens to a battlefield and take the civilian milieu around it away and make way for Star Wars. Haig said the Strategic Defense Initiative, dubbed the Star Wars, is needed to prevent the Soviet Union from establishing a military monopoly in space. I wish whomever wrote that speech had asked him to give it on the secure line, Secretary of Defense Weinberger to Weinberger, rather than in the headlines of this country, Haig said. Now, Haig was behind the secrecy of the White House tapes of Richard Nixon and became chief of staff at that time and covered up the entire military operation that was behind the Watergate intentions. And he's absolutely right. They should have kept it secret, because once that was out in the open, it meant a lot of explaining and budget turning around, whereas we have budgets for other secret weapons that we don't know about. And he feels it should have been kept secret because of all the controversy that's followed. Now, Alexander Haig's mentor, Fritz Kramer, shares space and offices in Washington, D.C. with Daniel Graham of High Frontier. And Haig is very much part of the Star Wars operation, and he's sorry that we were ever told about it. One reason he's sorry probably is because of the news coverage that details the cost. July 23rd, there was an article, "Your share of Star Wars is $570 every year in extra taxes. The cost for the next few years of Star Wars is $770 billion, but that's just the beginning. We don't have the cost overrun. $770 billion for Star Wars, and each American citizen, for what you earn next year and every year, will be paying $570 a year in your taxes to Star Wars, so you really can figure it is yours, and everybody who pays taxes pays a share, $570 of it will go to Star Wars. Now, the time that Star Wars was announced, in March of 83, Edward Teller was in the White House writing the speech for the president. He was right by his side. And shortly afterwards, a corporation that which he's on the board and was given stock on the board, the stock went way up. It was called Helionetics. And I did a few broadcasts on Helionetics because they were involved with Edwin Meese and his wife Ursula Meese and surfaced at the time of the hearings on Edwin Meese. Just this past week, Helionetics went bankrupt. Rather than be charged by the Security Exchange Commission or the foreknowledge of what was happening, they declared bankruptcy. And the Los Angeles Times had an article July 29th last week, and it shows a picture of some of the board members of Helionetics: retired Admiral Thomas Hayward, who now works at Litton Industry; hydrogen bomb developer Edward Teller; retired Air Force General David C. Jones; and former U.S. Treasury Secretary William E. Simon. Simon was in charge of the Olympic Games at the time that this scandal broke. The president had the speech on Star Wars, and then the stock went way, way up to $30 a share, from $6 up to $30. And each one of them would have made a lot of money. They probably did make it, but if the contracts went through, and because of the scandals, that is the reason that Helionetics is closing now. The LA Times said when the company won military contracts to develop blue-green laser communication systems for the Navy, critics complained that the company was profiting from its board members' Pentagon connections. Further, Edward Teller, who owns nearly 34,000 Helionetics shares, was criticized for his role in advocating a space-based laser defense system because he could potentially profit from the Helionetics laser system. So Helionetics this past week went bankrupt, but some very big heavyweights were on the board, and whether they made a profit quickly from that or had to give it back or were investigated, it was all hushed up, and it's, for all purposes, it's shelved, or they'll change their name. But they made a quick fix by quickly having the stock raise as soon as the president made the speech. And Edward Teller, also on the board of Western Goals with the late Larry McDonald, and all of this was happening just before Larry McDonald's death, these scandals of the Star Wars funds and the people who would profit from it and making the decisions about it in the Pentagon all came together. And as I say, right now, Helionetics, for all purposes, is folded. Also, the Helionetics director, a man named Bernard Katz, was involved in a company several companies that were under investigation from the Security Exchange Commission, and one of them was a firm called Zonics, Z-O-N-I-C-S, and that involved X-ray equipment. And Zonics was the connection, and I can refresh your memory. I believe I did broadcast on the links of that to Edwin Meese and Dr. Brian, a close friend of Meese, an associate for many, many years, and there were scandals involving the former director of Helionetics, who had to step down as director of his own company because of stockholder investigations of Mr. Katz. And I co-partner with Alexander Haig, who wants this important job of president, who's saying we should have concealed Star Wars. His co-friend and co-worker, Henry Kissinger, had an article this week, or an interview, which is typical of the Haig-Kissinger mentality. Kissinger warns Israel probe may harm security. Israel is racked with investigations into the Pollard, James Angleton, Rafi Eitan spy scandal, the fact that Israel's been sending arms to Iran, to Khomeini, the shooting of two PLO. They took off a bus and killed. They said that they were originally shot with four others, and two men were killed separately by the chief of the Israeli equivalent of the FBI. Now, Kissinger warns them, don't investigate that the probe may harm your security. This is the advice from Daddy Kissinger, who's covered up so many things in this country. As the Israeli police launched their investigation into the killing of two Palestinian hijackers, the former U.S. Secretary of State Henry Kissinger warned that the probe could damage Israeli security services. Imagine that two PLO are killed and Israeli secret service or intelligence services would be in jeopardy because of that act. The Tel Aviv newspaper reported that Mr. Kissinger gave advice in a message to Foreign Minister and Deputy Prime Minister Yitzhak Shamir. In a letter, he reported a 1970s Senate probe of the Central Intelligence Agency, that was the Frank Church Committee and the Senate Watergate Committee, that exposed some of its operational techniques and controversial covert actions. Those were the activities of Alexander Haig and Henry Kissinger. He advised that Israel should proceed cautiously and secretly in any investigation and into the general security services of the Shin Bet, which they say is like the FBI. And the Shin Bet has been threatening to collapse because of the cover-up of the murder of two PLO that were on the bus. So Henry Kissinger is spreading his world influence. He knows how to cover up in this country. Goodness knows, and he spreads it over there. Alexander Haig says, we shouldn't have told you about Star Wars. And Kissinger tells the Israeli intelligence, don't probe. I got in trouble in the 70s. Keep it secret. Speaking of secret, and it isn't a secret anymore, and I did several broadcasts on it, there was the expose of breaking into the offices of Shearson American Express in Philadelphia. And that is a client of Kissinger Associates, and one of the chief officers of that particular branch of Shearson American Express moved and fled to Brazil and worked with the San Paulo connections to the Mengele, I call them the Mengele Nazi, Kissinger intrigue down in San Paulo, Brazil, the links of the Philadelphia Shearson American Express to South America in the area that I've done many broadcasts on. This week, the New York Times had a story, June 26th, but I just pulled it out to share with you this week. The United States accuses Shearson of money laundering. And this is Philadelphia, June 26, New York Times. Shearson Lehman Brothers and the former manager of the Philadelphia office were indicted on charges of laundering at least, which could go up to $60 million, but it's at least $1.2 million for organized crime gambling syndicate. And that's what Kissinger and Haig are about, is putting in the crime syndicates and drug dealers when they effect a coup and the narcotics keep flowing in. The indictment was announced by the federal and city prosecutors and charged the former manager and six other Philadelphia men, including the son-in-law of former mayor Frank Rizzo, with conspiracy and operating illegal sports gambling enterprise. It was the first indictment of a brokerage house on charges of failing to report cash transactions. The brokerage house, as I say, is a client of Kissinger Associates. Kissinger Associates was actually very influential in contacting countries. He takes on countries. and organizations that pay $250,000 to $500,000 a year for, in quotes, advice, but most of it always eventually and probably gets exposed as related to assassinations, to drug dealing, and all kinds of hanky-panky, including links to fascism around the world. The interesting thing that they tried to do at the Shearson American Express was, instead of banking $10,000, which was the amount that had to be declared, $10,000 cash, when you got that kind of a deposit, had to be declared over that amount, they broke their deposits into $9,999. But that's what sophisticated corporate lawyers will do for you. There's a possible $16 million fine. Shearson and Mr. Cantley, the manager, were both indicted on 2 counts of conspiracy, 30 counts of failure to file currency transactions. Mr. Cantley was charged with aiding and abetting illegal gambling business. He could be sentenced to 198 years. I'll bet you he gets probation. They say right away the penalty is high, and then you know all of a sudden they're let off. There's a 69-page indictment, but as I say, these connections go back down to South America, and I'll do more on that if you want me to, and see if I've done that for you before. I'm not sure of the Brazilian connections to Shearson and this particular office and Henry Kissinger. Now, San Francisco Chronicle had an article this week that Alexander Haig wants to run for president. We know that. He mentioned that several weeks ago. There's nothing new. But what was new in the article, and I've never seen it in print before, it's been in a few books, was that they gave credit to Haig's his mentor, Fritz Kramer. None other than Fritz Kramer surfaced in the news this past week in the San Francisco Chronicle, and they credited him being behind the career of Henry Kissinger, and then their relationship with Mr. Califano, who also is in the Defense Department, the CIA, Defense Intelligence Agency, and the links to Alexander Haig. So Kramer is surfacing. He's only been seen in a few books, mentioned always by Henry Kissinger as being his mentor, but in terms of running for president, Haig is now referring to to Fritz Kramer as his mentor. And what I want to know is, how expensive is a fingerprint? Get a fingerprint in public in Peter Rodino's congressional committee to put his thumb and fingers down and see if they are different or the same as Adolf Hitler's Fritz Kramer. That should be easy to do. There's another article in the Chronicle different than that one, a different day. Haig thinks he'll run for president. He probably will run for president in 1988. He says, some people think I'm too hawkish. And he was speaking at the Bohemian Grove that I referred to last week on the broadcast. And he said he's really a moderate and that he resigned from President Reagan's cabinet under pressure. In 1982, I was under constant attack. What he was attacked for was that he was favoring the P2 and Licio Gelli and the Argentine junta dictatorship with their death squads over Great Britain in the Falklands War, and his conversations on the airplane were intercepted when Ronald Reagan was in Barbados, his favoring Argentina over Great Britain in that case, and he also gave the green light to Israel for the invasion of Lebanon, the massacre of women and children. He wasn't fired because he was a hawk or he was a liberal. I mean, what I'm telling you about him indicates what kind of a hawk he is. And he said he made some mistakes. I'm not a marionette. And he said the reporters always like to refer to the time when Reagan was shot. And he said, I am in control here in the White House, when John Hinckley and somebody else, not John Hinckley alone, took shots at Ronald Reagan. So he wants to run for president. He's surfacing the Fritz Kramer, the plans officer of the Pentagon, an officer over him in South Korean War, Vietnam, and actually was in Washington, the White House, through those periods. But he did serve, I believe, sometime in Vietnam. So Haig has announced not only that he wants to be president, and I doubt if he would win if Ronald Reagan ran for a third term, but he's pulling out Kramer, which is very interesting. There was a death this past week that, of course, you understand is purely coincidental. Sir Moses I. Finley, F-I-N-L-E-Y, age 64, from Cambridge, England. noted scholar at Cambridge University, wrote books that were accessible to the general public. He died June 23rd. He was born in New York. He was educated at Syracuse and Columbia University. In 1952, he was teaching at Rutgers when he and other faculty members were called before the U.S. Senate to a subcommittee on internal security. They testified they were not communists. These are the Senator Joe McCarthy hearings. But he refused to say whether they had ever been in the past. When they refused to obey the Rutgers Board of Trustees' demand that they testify, they were all removed from the payroll. He later went on to be a lecturer and teacher at Cambridge. He described his political activities there and in the United States. While at Syracuse to receive an honorary degree in 1982, he boycotted the commencement address by then Secretary of State Alexander Haig because he said his presence would suggest support for Haig's foreign policy, so he would not be there. The same time that Haig announces on July 16th that he's going to run for president or wants to run for president, July 16th, there's an announcement that Sir Moses Finley, who obviously is an educated person, a teacher, and an anti-Haig person, is dead in England. They didn't give the cause at age 64. Henry Kissinger, the co-partner of Cramer and Haig, has a syndicated column every week in the newspaper. And last week, he talked to, the title is called Grand Compromise. The LA Times has a large issue of it, the San Francisco Chronicle, and it goes all over the world, the syndicated column, to keep Henry Kissinger in your eyes at all times. And he talks about two important essential principles that the president must have if he visits Moscow. One is the deployment of the strategic defense. You can't separate it from any other kind of defense, and the important thing is strategic defense. And SDI, again, is the important aspect of former Defense Intelligence Agency Chief Daniel Graham, who, again, shares offices with Fritz Cramer, the mentor of Haig and Kissinger. So these boys keep pushing the strategic defense initiative. Now, the man who brought Fritz Cramer to the United States. All of these men are from Germany, and they came to the United States during the war, or just before. Fritz Cramer came before America had entered the war, but he was brought in by Peter Drucker. I haven't updated much on Peter Drucker for you. Peter Drucker is Clark Professor of Political Science at Claremont School in California. It's in Los Angeles, the east part of Los Angeles. He's been there for quite a few years. If you look on the racks of video cassettes now in various stores, you see Peter Drucker's video cassettes, tape cassettes, books. He's always been visible, but he's becoming more and more visible. And this week, with the subject of Cramer and Kissinger and Alexander Haig's names in the news, it's interesting that Wall Street Journal, August the 1st, has an article, and they run continuous articles by Peter Drucker on how to manage the boss. That's a good title because he knows how to do that and how to keep the boss aware. His name is in the news and in the Wall Street Journal, and it tells you how to handle and iron out reports of consensus and so forth, working with Eisenhower or President Reagan. And how an important thing is that I see his cassettes in the bookstores, radio shops, and he's becoming very visible. Now, there's another man who has not been so visible because of news blackouts, who is linked to Alexander Haig when Haig worked at United Technology. And I'm going to cite this very short article in two different places this evening. The title of the article is Probe of Mystery Figure Widens. It was in the Washington Times, July 16th, and it has to do with Francesco Pazienza, and I've talked about him at great length, but not enough. Pazienza was at Alexander Haig's office. Remember, I cited the date. It was a day after John Lennon was murdered with Michael Ledeen. He was been in a prison or a jail in New York City over the past year, and he went back to Italy. Now he's been sent back to Italy, but he was held and sequestered, particularly while the trial of Aja was going on. Aja was charged with shooting Pope John Paul II, and Aja was going to implicate the Bulgarians and the KGB. And he also talked about Francesco Pazienza trying to squeeze a Russian story out of it that didn't exist, that he was a pressure point in the prison with Ali Mehmet Aja, trying to turn this into an Eastern conspiracy instead of the West, and coming from the CIA. The article, the short article says, the United States has loosened the terms of extradition of former Italian secret agent Francesco Pazienza, allowing him to stand trial on extortion charges, judicial sources said yesterday. Pazienza, 40 years old, a former assistant to the Director General of the Italian Intelligence Service, whose name has been linked with a series of Italian crimes and political mysteries, was extradited from a New York prison June the 19th. He secretly, quietly left New York City. Now, Michele Sindona, his partner, was given cyanide and murdered in the Italian jail just recently. And Ali Aja has tuberculosis, so doesn't have too long to live if the diagnosis is correct. Their partner, Roberta Calvi, was murdered in London, and he's been sent to Italy on a minor charge of approximately a $20,000 swindle when he's involved with murder, death squads, and multinational violence and swindles. He was sequestered out of New York June the 19th. Now, this is the interesting part of this story. The original terms of his extradition, this is America making the original terms, allowed the authorities to investigate only his connection to the 1982 collapse of Banco Ambrosiano. Only the money connections. It was Italy's largest private banking failure. Judicial sources said that the terms do not allow magistrates to question Pazienza about the illegal P2 Masonic Lodge, which involved the military dictatorship in Argentina and Monte Carlo and in Europe and many other places, United States, or the 1980 bombing that killed 85 people at Bologna Railway Station, which he orchestrated with Licio Gelli, and his alleged illegal activities by the Italian Secret Services, which the Washington Times, the Reverend Moon paper, very nicely doesn't include the Italian Secret Services using him to see Aja to swing a cold, hot war Russian KGB link to the assassination of the Pope. And it was to divert from Licio Gelli, who was at Ronald Reagan's inauguration. It was to divert from the relationship of Pazienza to Aja or Michael Ledeen and Claire Sterling and Paul Hensa, all of the CIA, all of them creating the fabric of terrorism and blaming the Russians for something they didn't even think about. So Pazienza is in Europe, but the terms are that they don't go into the Bologna bombing. If you go to the Bologna bombing, you have a mass murderer being charged in Italy on the Bologna bombing, then you have the mass murderer directly linked to Alexander Hagen, Ronald Reagan. So you have to keep that part out of it so he can go over there if he doesn't mess around with that. Now, in the newspaper this morning in the San Francisco Chronicle, this is August the 11th, 1986, and many of you have probably seen it by now, double defector levels new charges at the CIA. Vitaly Yurchenko, the Soviet defector who made a dramatic return to Russia in November of 85, told a Moscow newspaper that the CIA tried to make him implicate the Soviet Union in the 1981 attempt to assassinate Pope John Paul II. And that's to tie him in with Ledeen, hence, Sterling, Pazienza's script. In Saturday's edition of Pravda, Yurchenko said the CIA tried to get him to publicly expose Soviet plans for subverting Central America. When he asked for proof of this, Yurchenko said he was told that materials and documents would be brought to him and that he would testify to their authenticity. He said that Tom Fountain, identified in the article as a deputy CIA director, told him in quotes, "Our press will do what it can so people believe you. It has had comparable experience." And the point about the press is, do you remember the NBC one-hour white paper by Marvin Kalb, whose brother Bernard Kalb runs the State Department news for NBC, going in for 1 hour into the KGB connections that were created by Alexander Haig of NATO, formerly of NATO, Francesco Pazienza, Claire Sterling, Michael Ledeen, and Paul Henze. We used one of our three major news media networks, the NBC, to have a white paper to make the KGB connections and what they were telling him. Our press has had experience, and you better believe they've had experience on that. Our press has, and Yurchenko was told to say that the KGB was involved. I'll take a one-minute break here and then go back and finish this article, and there'll be much more about that in the news, I'm sure, and continue along those lines with dirty tricks that tie into people who want to be president of the United States or be reelected as president but are caught in these dirty dealings of drug money, murders, assassinations, bank collapses, and so forth. They go right up to the highest office of the White House at the present time.